Blog Talk Radio.
This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas on Thursday, May the 26th, and we're going to keep up touch base with our friend George Rodriguez down in South Texas. My original intent was to talk to George this week about Texas 28 and obviously the situation with Title 42 or the situation right now with Title 42, but obviously the events in Uvalde, Texas, not far from San Antonio, have overshadowed everything, so we'll be focusing a little bit of that and spend a little time on Texas 28 and then talk more about the border the next time we get together with our friend George. So let me say hello to our friend George down in San Antonio. George, I always ask you how the weather is. The weather up here is very nice. What about down there?
Yeah, it's very, very nice. In fact, yesterday it felt like fall. I mean, it was incredible. It was really, really nice.
Yeah. Well, I looked in the map, you know, I had heard before about Uvalde, Texas, but I wasn't sure exactly where it was. And I found it in the map today. It's like you were saying to me yesterday on the phone, it's like 80 miles from the Texas-Mexico border. And it's a community of about 10,000 people. There's, you know, a lot of communities like this in Texas, like Uvalde, communities where everybody knows each other, where, you know everybody's brother and sister, and you know, there's a sense of trust, I guess, in a community like that. And I guess that was the case in Uvalde, George, until this unfortunate incident, George.
Yeah, that's exactly. I mean, that's the fact. And unfortunately, the entire community is being judged by people who are from New York and Los Angeles. And, you know, there's a lot of stupid questions. In my opinion, there's stupid questions. I won't put it any other way.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of dumb questions that are being asked of the poor people of Uvalde. It is a community that is small. It's even though it's almost 90% or 80% Hispanic, it is very, very much mom and apple pie. It is very, very much a down-home community. This individual that committed this crime was completely off the radar because he was a loner. He had disappeared. He had dropped out of school. He was just not on the radar, in anybody's radar. And, you know, to judge, for people to judge somehow the entire community that it was not doing its job, it did not fairly take care of the kids. It's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah. George, let me just get a little bit better picture of Uvalde. When you say 80 to 85% Hispanic, is it second or third generation Hispanics, or is it, you know, people who recently arrived? To the best of your knowledge, what is it?
I would say the vast majority of them are second or third generation.
Right. So like you. In other words, they're like you. They're people who've lived in Texas, yeah.
Right. And they are also, a lot of them are also very much involved in rural industry, such as ranching, farming, tractors, the sale of tractors. Or there is a huge, huge presence of a Border Patrol station there. And there are many, 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 I heard an estimate of something like 200 families in Uvalde that are related to Border Patrol, that work with Border Patrol in some capacity.
So people who work in the Border Patrol who live, you're saying people who work in the Border Patrol who live in Uvalde.
Exactly.
So these would be like agents or officers who work in the Border Patrol who live there. Now, as I said, I'm learning about what happened, but here's what I think happened, and please fill in any blanks or correct me if I'm wrong. You have a young man who had all kinds of problems, but at the same time had not broken any law. So he did not have a criminal background. Okay, so, you know, he went to get a gun and he had no criminal background. So he had, you know, he was legally able to get a gun. Just curiosity, George, did he get the gun in Uvalde?
My understanding is yes, that he bought it here. He bought it in, he bought it there. Yes.
Yeah. All right, so he bought the gun, and, you know, he apparently decided to go. He killed his grandmother, I guess, or tried to kill her. I think
he
she's still okay, right?
He shot her.
She's in the hospital, right? She's in the hospital.
Correct.
Now, and then he goes into the school with the intention of killing these kids. And that
he was looking to shoot his mother, and he was going to go to the high school. He could not get onto the campus of the high school because there is security there, gang violence, teenagers fighting. There is security at the high school, and so he could not get there. He was apparently very upset, angry, and he started driving fast down the street. He lost control of the vehicle. It crashed, and the first thing he did was then focus on the elementary school. He went into the elementary school angry and with every intention of harming people.
So he walked into the school, and this is the part that amazes me. He walks into the school. Now, all of us have had kids in school, and we know that the doors are supposed to be locked up. You're not supposed to get into a school. And so he apparently walked into the back door, which was unfortunately opened, and then he just started, I guess he found a classroom and started shooting, I think, one or two classrooms because he killed a couple of teachers. And, when did he have contact with the police? Fill me in.
He walked into the school. He walked past some classrooms, and for some reason he went into that one classroom and closed the door and announced that he was going to kill everybody, and barricaded himself in and then began shooting. It was right after he walked in and teachers saw him with the gun that they started calling frantically 911. Apparently, what had happened was that somebody saw him crash and get out of the car with the rifle, with the gun, and because he actually had two guns, with the rifle and the pistol, and walk over to the school. And at that point, somehow the Border Patrol agent was in the area who called for backup. There were Border Patrol agents that immediately showed up, even before the police. And it was at that point that they could hear the shooting and people were running out. And somehow one of the agents got himself into the building, got into the area where the guy was, got a clear look into the classroom and picked him off.
Okay. All right, because there's been all kinds of controversy, as I'm sure you know, about the timing of the police, how quickly they acted. And I don't have, honestly, enough information to pass judgment on the police. My criticism up to now has been that he should have never been able to get into the school. Had there been a lock on that door, he would have had the same experience. No, but let me just make this quick point. Had there been a lock on the middle school door, he would have had the same problem he had in the high school door, that he would have not been able to get in. And then who knows what would have happened, but he wouldn't have been able to shoot 20 kids from outside the building, George.
correct. I mean, the first irony to the whole thing is that he was not allowed onto the high school because, he looked unusual. He's not a student. And, they anticipated a problem with him. So because there's security on the high school, he was not let into the high school. That's the irony of the whole thing in that point. And then there's the situation where he goes and he careens, he has a crash, he just literally walks into the elementary school where there was no security. And then proceeds to commit the horror. And then because you have literally you've got three, four different types of law enforcement agencies involved in this situation, each one having its own policies, then it makes it, it's confusing. You've got the Border Patrol, you've got the state troopers who are also, lots and lots of them are in the immediate area. You have the National Guard that's also in the immediate area because they are all working on border security. And then, of course, you've got the local police plus the local county deputies. All of these law enforcement agencies have their own policies on how to react. I mean, they all have training, but they all have different ways of reacting. The criticism of the Uvalde police is, in my opinion, it's not justified because the guys have a policy that, they are supposed to contain. They are not supposed to jump into the middle of the thing. And they've never faced anything like this. Never, never, never had faced right. anything like this. So, on the other hand, the state troopers and the county folks could become a little bit more aggressive, but they didn't show up, not immediately. The Border Patrol agency is right down the road. They were able to respond real quick. And the matter is that the problem is it's five different agencies all working from different points of right. from different policies.
And all of those things are correct. I don't deny that these agencies have different rules. But there's no question that what made it all possible, what made it possible for him to enter the high school, or in this case, the middle school, is that there was a door that he could open. Had there been a lock there, who knows what he would have done. Maybe he would have shot at the door. Maybe he would have shot at the wall. Maybe he would have shot at the glass, at the windows. But I don't think that would have killed probably. Maybe some injured kids would have been injured, but by then he would have been shooting and maybe some police officers could have confronted him. I think when you look at this whole story, George, what's really sad, and of course, it's difficult to speak about the death of little kids. I think what makes all of this possible is that open door. Had that door been closed, I think this would be a totally different story. And maybe he would have been killed, or maybe he would have been arrested, probably would have been killed, but you wouldn't have this tragedy there. I mean, that's my opinion.
Right.
From up here. Does that sound right?
That's right. Well, I mean, again, these small schools, these elementary schools, the level of violence that they see, from a sixth grader, from a fifth grader, is nowhere near what you're going to see in junior high or in high school. And so the security is much more lax. That's the fact. That's the fact. And so, it's not an excuse. It's just that's the way it has been. I'm sure things are going to change now.
Right. Well, I certainly hope so. There's an article in today's Dallas Morning News talking about how Texas was supposed to be ready, talking about that after the incident in Santa Fe school, I don't remember where that was, but somewhere in Texas, back in May of 2018, that there was some legislation that passed the legislature, and the idea was that we would be ready for something like this with more security, and apparently millions of dollars were spent for all of this security, but I guess it didn't get to this little school. And that's a shame because they exposed, I believe, all of these kids. So what a terrible, terrible situation. Now, in the middle of all of this, George, Beto O'Rourke.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, this is almost like something. If the topic was not so serious, if the topic was not so fatal and so bad, this would almost be like something out of Saturday Night Live. But
yes.
He shows up to blow up the conference, and then the mayor of Uvalde just lets it out and unleashes on Beto. And that's what we saw on TV. But do you have any idea what the reaction was there from people you may have spoken to, George?
Yeah, well, I spoke to the mayor last night personally, and he was fit to be tied, needless to say, still. The camera, the press has focused more on the mayor, but the lieutenant governor also jumped on him and told him to get out. He was surrounded by several police officers and state troopers and escorted out. And he tried, initially he tried to resist, which would have really, really made him look even dumber. But I think what he was trying to do was make himself out as a martyr. His timing, his actions really, really created a problem for Democrats in Texas, I guarantee.
There were some Democrats in that room who represent that district.
Yes, a lot of them.
Yeah,
there
who
was
could
a
not
lot
have been
of
very happy with what he
a
did.
A lot of them were, you know,
yeah.
A lot of them were in there. Their reaction was less than supportive. The only mm-hmm. place that you hear support for him is from the far left. I understand that Senator Liz Warren, Pocahontas, has made a comment supporting him. AOC has made a comment supporting him. These folks that literally have no shame and have no sense of propriety are the ones that are running to, you know, to create a to make him a martyr in some form or fashion, a political martyr.
Right.
It
was. It was pretty bad. When I didn't see it live, but I saw the video, and it was pretty outrageous. We're going to take a little break, George. When we come back, I have one more thing to say about Beto, and then we'll talk about Texas 28. We'll be right back with our friend George Rodriguez. Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, talking today with our friend George Rodriguez about what's happening in South Texas, Uvalde, Texas, the school shooting. And before we move to Texas 28, George, in that runoff election, I think that Beto was looking for publicity because when you look at his campaign, not really going anywhere. He's at 40% in just about every poll taken. And I also think that he may be having a money problem. And by that, I mean he's not getting the same amount of money that he got before in 2018 when his campaign was one of the best funded, if not the best funded. So I think that, you know, he's desperate. That's the way it came across to me, George. What about you?
Oh, definitely. I mean, it was obviously, you know, an attempt to revive his political fortunes. Running for governor. And that's what makes this whole thing so shameless, absolutely disgusting, is that it had nothing to do with his sincerity about the kids who were shot or discussing the issues seriously. It had everything to do with him wanting to make himself known, seen, and supported.
Right. Yeah, it was all about him, which is in what will turn out to be the quote of 2022, the mayor of Uvalde, I think, spoke for many of us. I can't believe that you're such a blank, blank, blank to do this on this day. I thought the mayor of Uvalde, that's got to go down as one of the greatest quotes in American political history. Well, let's talk about Texas 28. As I see it right now, they are divided by 200 votes or less, 177, as I saw before the podcast. I assume there's going to be a recount, George.
Let me tell you, Jessica Cisneros, who lost, is not going to give up. I mean, if you recall the behavior of Stacey Abrams when she ran for governor in Georgia, she still hasn't, you know, she got beat handily, but she still has never conceded. You're going to see that here in this situation because there is also a lot of anger from the liberals, including and particularly the liberals, the far leftists in Washington, D.C. AOC, again, sticking her nose into Texas politics, as well as Bernie Sanders, are encouraging Jessica Cisneros not to concede and to demand a recount. It's very, very funny. I mean, there are so many anomalies in this whole election. First of all, here in San Antonio or here in Bexar County, a piece of Bexar County is in that 28th district. Well, in analyzing the votes, analyzing the election the other night, my buddy and I looked at it, and Jessica Cisneros won 89% of the early vote, particularly the absentee ballots. She won 89% in San Antonio.
Wow, sounds like Philadelphia. Sounds like Philadelphia, George.
It was, we had to look at each other and go, wow, how about that? And then on top of that, there were certain efforts in smaller communities, like in Zapata, where Zapata County, which is just next door to Webb County, Laredo, where there were all sorts of questionable actions by the Cisneros campaign in actively trying to prevent people from voting, questioning people's credentials to vote, challenging IDs, et cetera, et cetera. And it was amazing how this was carried out. And
but he still won at least the first round. But do you think that, I mean, I'm not familiar with all of the rules in Texas, but I guess probably if it's within a certain percentage, you get an automatic recount. But I think here, I mean, 200 votes sounds like a few votes, but it may not be less than 1%, George.
No, it is. I think there is going to be a recount. It's 177 votes separate them. 177 votes separate them right now. It'll be very, very interesting. One of the things that I know that Henry Cuellar has been encouraged to do is not only stand there and take the vote count, but also to challenge the ballots, the absentee ballots themselves. There is a real, real question as to how these absentee ballots were done. Ballot harvesting is the best thing that we can say, but whether or not, quite often there have been instances where absentee ballots have the same handwriting in about, 50, 60 of the ballots. And Henry is being encouraged to challenge those ballots. However, there are some Democrats that are just livid at the idea of him doing that. I'm not sure why. I mean, if you want a fair election, why are you worried?
Yeah. But you know, Henry Cuellar is such an oddball in today's Democrat Party. He's pro-life. He's against the Biden border policies. So, I mean, he touches, he violates two of the sacraments, if I may put it that way, of the Democrat Party. I mean, I've read something that he's the only pro-life Democrat in the House, which is really amazing to me. We have, when you think about it, that half of the Democrats are pro-life and half are pro-abortion, I can understand that. But when there's only one out of 200 or whatever it is there are in the House, I mean, that is completely out of touch with the country. The country is not that way. So it's just amazing. But that's Henry Cuellar's problem. He is, unfortunately, pro-life, and that doesn't go down well with these people. And I guess he gets a good report from the NRA, and that doesn't go down with them either, George.
Right. I mean, this guy, I'm not sure why he's a Democrat. If he's really sincere about it, I don't know why he's a Democrat.
Well, I agree with you. I think if he switched parties a year ago, he'd be coasting to a reelection, because I think he would easily win as a Republican. And why in the world he would want to stay as a Democrat now after this? I wrote an article at the American Thinker saying that he now faces the mother of all bringing the party back together campaigns. Because how do you bring this party back together? How do you bring the Cisneros voters? How do you go to them and say, okay, let's forgive and forget and you vote for me in November? That ain't going to happen.
Tell me about it.
That ain't going to happen. Some of them will. But not all of them.
Yeah. No, it is. I mean, the division and anger by the Bernie Sanders folks, folks like Nancy Pelosi did nothing to help their candidate, but instead she has been, helping Henry. Really, really, it has made them angry. I mean,
To believe that he's the. I mean, if he were to win, and I think he will be eventually announced the winner. But again, the Jessica Cisneros people are not going to support him. Most of them are going to stay home, or they're going to vote for the Green Party or something like that, which is, I think, that's going to make it very likely that this young lady, Cassie Garcia, becomes the next representative in that district, George.
That's right. That's right. I think that if there's any time Republicans have an opportunity to capture national offices, national and statewide offices in the valley, along the border, it is now. It is now.
It absolutely is. And that's why I predict that if Cuellar wins, and I think he probably will technically win, then I think he's going to have a tough time bringing that party together. Well, George, let's put the other points to the next time, Title 42 and the situation on the border for the next time, because these two topics today were pretty consuming. And I wish you a happy Memorial Day. And we'll get together hopefully very soon after that for an update on Texas 28 and anything else that you want to bring to our attention, George. Hopefully Beto.
Yes.
I keep thinking that Beto may interrupt our conversation, George.
Yes, and let me apologize to folks right now, because I have not. I may sound a little out of it right now, because Monday night we had the election. Tuesday we had the horrendous thing. I have been running back and forth between here and Uvalde every day, and I think I've got maybe 6 hours of sleep.
Yeah. Well, we appreciate
your.
Yeah, you better do that. But if you talk to the mayor of Uvalde, tell him that I was cheering him when he told Beto, "I can't believe you're such a, you know what." I thought that was the quote of 2022. That will go down as the quote of 2022. I'll be remembering that quote for a long time.
We should use
George.
That more often. We should use it more often with Biden and Pelosi. And
yes,
others.
And those liberals. That's exactly right. George, have a great weekend and happy Memorial Day, and we'll talk to you after.
Thank you very much. Have a good one. Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you so much. Our good friend George Rodriguez down in South Texas is always up to date and well informed about what's happening in South Texas. Now, a lot of things are happening down there, of course. This Texas 28 race, which is very important for the future of the Democrat Party in Texas, but also the tragedy at Uvalde, Texas, the school where it's unspeakable what happened. So we send our prayers to all the families, and I don't know how you deal with something like that, but we pray that they do. Have a wonderful day, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.